and welcome to the Senate Transportation Committee. I wish you all a happy St. Patrick's Day. I call this meeting to order Tuesday. It is March 17th, 2009, and it is 2 minutes after one. At this time, if we haven't already done so, I'd ask you to turn all your electronic devices off, please. And please let the record reflect that with us today is we have committee members Joe Pascavan, Senator Joe Pascavan, and Senator Kevin Myers and Senator Linda Menard. On today's agenda, we will hear Senate Bill 142, an act authorizing the conveyance of certain lands of the Alaska Railroad Corporation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We will also have a transportation finance study overview after we finish that from the Alaska Municipal League. So Senator Pascavan has his staff member, Jeff Steff, here to present the bill today. Jeff, would you please come forward, state your name, affiliation, and give your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Steff, and I am staff to Senator Pascavan. Thanks for the opportunity to present Senate Bill 142. I'll keep my remarks real brief, just kind of go over the a little bit of the sponsor statement, and then there are some content experts from DOT and the Alaska Railroad who can answer more specific questions about the nature of the bill. In a nutshell, DOT and Public Facilities is preparing to reconstruct Illinois Street, which provides primary access to downtown Fairbanks from the north. If you're familiar with Fairbanks, this is going to be new construction over the Chena River right downtown in the heart of the center of the Golden Heart. In order to complete the project, simply the DOT and Public Facilities needs to acquire full interest in approximately 5 acres of property. The Alaska Railroad Corporation Act requires legislative approval for this action to proceed. Senate Bill 142 provides that authority, and also that DOT can provide a combination of cash, land of equal value, or a combination of both to the Alaska Railroad. And with that, I entertain any questions, but probably defer from the.
Are there any committee members that have questions of Jeff? Okay, I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
At this time, I'll go ahead and ask if there's anybody on net or off net. Okay, just one moment, please. Take a short at ease, just a minute. We have Denise Michaels. Denise?
Yes.
Did you have any questions of the sponsor of the bill?
Nope, I'm just waiting for the transportation presentation we'll do after this.
Okay, then I'm sorry I misunderstood. I thought you were going to testify on this bill. So with that then, can I see a motion or?
Did you close public testimony?
Well, I officially closed public testimony.
Any amendments?
And there are, do any members have any further questions or amendments or discussion? Okay. Hearing none, what is the will of this committee? Okay, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, I move that we move from the Transportation Committee SB 142 to the next committee of referral with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Senator Myers. Are there any objections? Seeing none, hearing none, then Senate Bill 142 passes out of transportation and onto the next committee of referral. Now we'll have the overview. As the, we'll just pause just a second to sign what we did. Only three of us signing, so it'll be just a short minute here.
I think Senator Davis is.
time, I would like us to recognize that Senator Betty Davis has joined us. And where we are now, we are on the overview from the Department of Transportation. So this is the second and final item on our agenda today. We are privileged to have a transportation finance study overview by the Alaska Municipal League. Will the presenters please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and thank you for your presentation. Who's here for the railroad? Okay, could you come forward, please? Transportation. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not sure if Denise wants to make some opening remarks.
Denise, okay. First of all, I would like you to identify yourself.
My name is Christopher Warden. I'm with Cambridge Systematics, and we are the authors of this study.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Denise, do you want to make some opening remarks, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Denise Michaels. I serve as the mayor of Nome, the board president for the Alaska Municipal League, and vice president for Community Services Division here at Kuwerik. Within Kuwerik, I manage the Indian Reservations Road Program for the Bering Straits region. And I was also honored to participate as a stakeholder for DOT's 2030 long-range transportation plan. The Alaska Municipal League represents the unified voice of Alaska municipalities to successfully influence favorable federal and state legislation. We also build consensus and partnerships with organizations and the public to solve Alaska's challenges. Last year, members of AML began discussing issues regarding transportation and energy. We came up with a plan to communicate, collaborate, and bring ideas to help solve some of our transportation issues. AML created a transportation ad hoc committee, which developed a transportation policy for the AML board consideration. At our November annual meeting, energy and transportation were included in our priorities. The membership adopted resolution 2009-12, urging the governor and the legislature to capitalize long-term transportation funding for Alaska. The Highway Trust Fund ran out of money last fall and was recapitalized with the general fund transfer. But it's widely viewed as insufficient to fund state highway programs at the same level as the past. Reauthorization of the federal highway legislation may shift funding away from rural states and move towards greenhouse gas reduction, transit, and congestion relief in the country's major metropolitan areas. Both these factors will work against the interests of Alaska. Alaska is one-fifth of the size of the U.S., and our transportation needs are both great for rural and urban Alaska. The state of Alaska needs to create a reliable option of transportation funding to meet the unmet transportation needs. In October 2008, AML contracted with Cambridge Systematics, who specialize in transportation finance analysis. So they were tasked to examine state transportation funding trends and transportation funding in other states. Changes anticipated in federal transportation funding. And due to our short timeline and limited funding for this study, we focused just on surface transportation. We did not fail to recognize the critical importance of marine and aviation components of the state system, but this is just a place for us to start. And we understand we must look at all of these holistically for a full approach. AML believes that transportation and its support systems are just the foundation for economic development. The transportation system must be safe, reliable, efficient, cost-effective, and environmentally sound. Most important, adequate funding is required to meet these specifications. We hope that this report will start the discussion of how the state of Alaska will address the looming shortage of highway funding for our transportation system. We believe this report has information, data, statistics for us to work together to consider various funding options. The consultant has been working for 3 months through a series of reviews by our project steering committee, who consists of former DOT Commissioner Joe Perkins, Mark Kiki, Mike Burton, former Deputy Commissioner John McKinnon, Tom Brigham, former Director for Statewide Planning, Dan Sterling with CH2M Hill, John Duffy, Borough Manager for the Mansu area, Mike Caskey with Swansea and AML staff. We are very pleased that Chris is here to represent the report, and I thank you for taking the time to allow us to do this today.
Thank you, Denise. Are there any members that want to say anything to Denise before we get started with the overview? I'm going to step away from my microphone so I can watch the PowerPoint presentation from a different angle, Denise. So if any questions come up or anything, I won't be right here in front of as chair, but I'll have another microphone over there. Okay, and with that, we will let Christopher from Cambridge Systematics Incorporated do the presentation.
Thank you. I'd like you to be able to stop me at any time if you have questions on the material. Overall, I don't think this will take me more than 20 minutes or less, but it's fine if we have some discussions about some of the topics. What I want to do, though, is go through a very quick synopsis of what the study's objectives were. I want to talk about three areas in which our findings are particularly relevant going forward. One is this chronic underinvestment in the state's transportation infrastructure and our findings there. The current federal funding that you depend on for much of your spending and what's at risk in that funding. And then some options that we threw together, purely hypothetical, but a way to demonstrate how various sources can be brought to bear, diversify the portfolio of funding you have, and perhaps shore up some of the funding gap that currently exists. We were asked as part of the study to address six questions that were put together by the steering committee, the current trends in capital and operating needs, identify the funding from the federal sources, that are in play at the moment under reauthorization and maybe impact levels of funding in Alaska. We were asked to evaluate some alternative sources, especially those that are being investigated heavily by the reauthorization process that's underway now in Washington, D.C., which depends more on user fees and public-private partnerships for funding the transportation systems in states. We were asked to look at factors that were most likely to have an effect in the future on transportation's fundings levels and identify some possible strategies to react to those trends, and then finally evaluate some various funding sources that haven't been used in the state but are being considered in other parts of the states and the world. And this is a lot of material. It's in a large report, which is available to you now. We're trying to pack all this into a 20-minute presentation. So with that said, I'm going to focus on these three topics. First off, what appears to be an ongoing, somewhat chronic underinvestment in the infrastructure of the state. This is not, you're not unique. A lot of other states have been encumbered with the same degree of backlog in terms of both maintenance and capital investment. It's perhaps more acute here because, unlike other states which have economies dependent more on industries that don't depend so dearly on transportation, you do because most of the industry that you have here is either related to resource extraction or traded industries. Traded industries are those that need transportation to export or import materials in and out of the state. It includes tourism. And it tends to have a much higher part of its overall what we call value added related to transportation activity. So it's more sensitive to the level of investment. There is also a need to expand some of those industries to help you diversify your economy more away from petroleum. And those industries are affected by the level of investment. We are all familiar with some of the other conditions you face, unlike the lower 48, certainly the far-flung communities and the need for transportation to link those communities. The harsher environment drives up your costs quite a bit compared to other states. And then you're a much younger state with a much less mature network of transportation. So all that sort of ratchets up the dependence on transportation and why the underinvestment may be a serious problem. The work done by the DOT on the previous, on its 2030 plan, identified about $1.1 billion in annual needs that it has to fund. Of that amount, about $518 billion is funded. The other is unfunded. So on an annual basis, that's sort of the rolling deficit, if you will. And I invite anybody in the audience here who has better handle on those statistics to certainly characterize them differently if they want. If you add in, now this is just for roads and highways, state highways and bridges. If you add in the marine highway system, transit, rural roads, The unfunded need annually goes up to $220 million. If we look at the current backlog, the amount of unfunded maintenance and life cycle costs that have not been dealt with through 2007, we have about $250 million that have accumulated. Now, if you look at that over a 5 or 10 year period on average, and by the way, that does not include the unfunded needs, the backlog that's in aviation, transit, or the marine highway system, doesn't include the local and urban and rural roads, and it does not include any capacity needed to meet increasing demand on the system. In fact, the DOT has diverted about $60 million a year from its highway and bridge capital to maintenance. So it is, again, underfunding the capital even in and not meeting the ongoing maintenance and life cycle cost needs. If we look just at the annual amount that is needed for bridges and highway maintenance over the last 5 years, that annual amount they're being able to dedicate is about $36 million a year. That leaves about 140 of unmet needs, again, just for routine maintenance and maintaining the network as it is. So moving on to what comes next, which is that all this deficit that you're facing has been funded in the past and up until now by enormous amount of federal funding, somewhere in the 80. It moves around, but somewhere to 80% of the need. The reason that this is important is when you compare yourselves to other states and you look at the percent that you spend on transportation, including state and federal funds, in other words, everything you receive, as a percentage of the gross state product, which is just one of many metrics you could use to measure what your investment size is. Alaska comes in at the highest, in the top 10 of states in terms of its spending, which is consistent with what we talked about earlier, the far-flung communities, the harsh weather and environment that you have to work in, and the young nature of the network that it needs more investment. What worries us when we look at this picture is that if you look at what you're spending from the state, not the federal, all your states, you're somewhere in the middle. But if you look at this picture when you look at just capital investment, in other words, enlarging the system to handle the growing demand or replacing some of the infrastructure that wears out, you're in the lowest. And this comes back to the dependence of your economy on transportation. Yes, please. Yes.
So you're seeing Montana, North Dakota, Washington, New York, South Dakota, West Virginia. Those are some of the top. And then we're seventh, correct?
That's correct.
But then on the next slide, we come in kind of in the middle or?
Yeah, slightly below average.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And I point out, too, that Montana is up there in large part because of Max Baucus. They have quite a bit of leverage there. But they're a very similar state to you in the sense that they have a very small population of very diverse communities. We've done a lot of work in Montana, and their situation is not is somewhat analogous to yours.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. So given that dependence, what's happening at the federal level with funding? Well, as Denise pointed out, there's been a program level from the Highway Trust Fund of maintaining, corrected for inflation, basically the current levels all the way from during the reauthorization, this current safety lieu authorization, and through the next reauthorization. I think the Senate's called it MAP 21, but we'll see what the name is when it happens. The problem is that why they've program spending at that level, there is a decline in the amount of revenues coming in large part because mileage on the vehicle fleet is getting better and the 18 and a half cents of federal gas taxes collected is going down. A lot of vehicles now have alternative fuels that aren't being taxed, and gradually this erosion, along with some lowering of VMT of late among households due to the recession, has reduced the amount of money available, and the outlays have depleted the fund. And so the current balance of the account has gone negative. And as you all know, last year there was an infusion, a one-time stopgap funding that was put in about $8 billion to bring the account back into the positive and allow federally funded projects to go on in states. It's going to require another one very shortly to keep it funded. It's speculation at this point when reauthorization will occur, but there are people in D.C. who are suggesting that a second trip to the well by the Obama administration after the stimulus spending may be postponed for some years, and we may go on at current with current stopgap. Nevertheless, the federal funds are now becoming much more short, and the scrutiny given to funding federal share of projects is increasing. Along those lines, yes, please.
Question.
Yeah, no, by all means.
On the tax, the gas tax that we saw go away, it was for a one-year term only. How much in transportation dollars did you lose because of that action?
You mean when they lowered the gas tax because of, I don't think they suspended federal
suspended
tax.
Suspended it?
No, that was the state of Alaska.
The state of Alaska.
Yes.
I mean,
I have a chart at the very end. I'll show you that. It gives you that those statistics. But it's a good point. No, the federal gas tax was maintained. Current proposals for safety lieu, for reauthorization of safety lieu, MAP 21, suggest 10 cents a gallon increase in federal gas tax, but we'd all be speculating at this point what would be done there. The other area that's of should be of concern to Alaska is that the donee states, the donor states, the states that are contributing more in federal gas tax, collected in federal tax in their area, than they receive back as part of the funding from the Highway Trust Fund, have been gradually pushing up what they're looking for as a return. And if we look at the three cycles of reauthorization, the previous one, T21, safety lieu, the current one, and what will be the future, what these donor states are asking is that their share of the return increase, and they're looking for a target of 95%. Every time that increases, that reduces the amount that donee states that receive more from federal tax than they pay out, goes down, which Alaska is the highest. So again, we don't know if the 95% will be reached in the next reauthorization, but that is the target that the donor states have set for themselves. Some policies that are likely to change in reauthorization, but again, we're speculating, but have clearly been a part of the major push, the legislative push, is to place a much larger emphasis on tolling and other kinds of user fees so that the local match of these projects goes up and it's derived from a source of the users. Now, this notion treats transportation more like what we would call a public utility than it does as a public good. And therefore, it puts the state of Alaska at a disadvantage, which has very little in the way of user fees being applied. And if it did, they are problematic, and we can talk about that. Some proposals would push a lot more responsibly the states and cities for funding their improvements, and this puts metropolitan areas at an advantage, which can raise funds either through sales tax increases, through state gas tax increases, or through user fee programs, tolling and what have you. Other states are definitely looking around and challenging the current status quo and are going to press their case, have been pressing their case in reauthorization. When they look at Alaska, they see, frankly, what amounts to a big target. They cite often the fact that you have a large permanent fund, which could fund a lot of your needs, a much higher percentage than you're currently doing. They see the only state that doesn't collect either an income tax or a sales tax. And finally, they see what was the lowest gas tax in the country until it was rescinded altogether. So I'm telling you what your competition is going to cite as reasons for acquiring a larger share of the federal money. With all that in mind, we come to our third topic. And stop me if you have any questions so far. And that is, what could be done to diversify the portfolio that you're using to fund, perhaps reduce the dependence on the federal as if there are significant declines in that amount, and overall perhaps close the gap that you're currently facing. We went around and looked at all the other states that we work in and others to see what's been done out there. And what we're proposing is purely hypothetical, but it's going to give you an idea of the order of magnitude of what each of these sources might contribute to close the gap. You remember from the earlier source, we talked about roughly $585 million annually in unfunded needs, including some transit and some other items. If we look at fuel taxes, the current average across the state, national average, is about 18 cents. This is from state sources, not from federal. Yours is going to be currently 8 cents. We look at the Alaska Transportation Fund, which has been proposed, a $1 billion fund, and if you were to achieve an 8% return on that. We look at the option for a lot of localities to impose local sales tax to fund some of their needs and to provide a bigger match to state-funded projects. This is an approach that's being used in a lot of states we're working in, where some of the locals are willing to tax themselves, but they want perhaps a more competitive position in getting matching funds from the state. A tax on car sales that would be dedicated or at least would be allocated towards transportation. I know there's a constitutional prohibition on that, but the idea would be that that money would eventually flow into transportation. Vehicle registration fees. Both these are intended to get closer to a user fee approach to funding some of your transportation needs, to move away from the general tax notion. And the reason for a user fee are many. We can talk about those. But one of the strongest arguments is that it sends a kind of price signal, if you will, to the user. It says this isn't just a public good like national defense, where everybody benefits and my consumption of national defense doesn't diminish your consumption of it. Unlike that, a road is something that is exclusively consumed. If I'm on it, and I'm on it in peak period, and I cause congestion, it interferes with your ability to use it. Plus, I derive a benefit, a personal benefit from using it. So the idea of a user fee is that there's some sort of quid pro quo or equivalence to the benefit I receive from how much I pay for it. Gas taxes are deemed a sort of user fee, but they send a very weak price signal. Most of us would be hard-pressed to tell you what the gas tax is when we go to the pump. And it's not clear, as you'll see in the last slide, that that fee is really transmitted into the consumer retail price of gasoline, certainly not directly. If we bring all those sources to bear and look at the portfolio that they might contribute, we have the following mixes. Now, I want to put this scenario one into a little more clear context. This one suggests the following. We have the $585 million annual gap in spending right now. If we were to use the following sources, we could fill up about $151 million of that gap with the following. We get, with 8% return, about $50 million a year from the Alaska Transportation Fund. If we increase the fuel tax, I forget the amount, I have to go back, eight cents. Then we to 18, we would get about $38 million a year. Vehicle registration fees, if they were increased, I think 50%. Would go up to 22. Anyway, you get the picture. Each of those sources would contribute these sources, but you'd only close about one-third of the gap that you currently have, or less than one-third, if these sources were used. The second scenario, again, purely hypothetical, is to increase the fuel taxes up to 28 cents a gallon and index that rate to inflation so that you're not losing purchasing power over time. This has been the chronic problem with the federal source, with all but four states that do index their fuel taxes. Over time, you really lose a great deal of purchasing power without indexing. That increase generates about $76 million annually. If you were to double the vehicle registration fees from 100 to 200 biennial, so about $45 million annually. If you were to impose the vehicle sales tax on cars, about 1.5%, you have $31 million. You encourage the local jurisdictions that don't have a sales tax right now to impose one, about 1.5%. That can generate $89 million that could be used to match some of the state projects. Obviously, they'd spend it on some of their own priorities as well. And if you were to capitalize the transportation fund, about $50 million. So in scenario two, what does it look like? You've now more than doubled the amount of money that you'll be able to put towards the, excuse me, not quite doubled, the amount of money you'd be able to put towards the $585 million gap. And these sources would break out in the following way. The third option does pretty much the same as the second, but it adds this idea of a local streets and roads, state roads and trails program of about $20 million annually. It reinstitutes that program, and that would generate about $20 million. There we did adjust some of the other increases. We're still doubling the registration fees. We're still increasing gas taxes to 28 cents a gallon. And we are suggesting backing down a little bit on the amount that could be that could be imposed on vehicle sales tax from 1.5 to 1.25. And the same thing with the local jurisdiction's sales tax amount. If this third scenario, again, it would generate the same amount of money, but the mix would be slightly different. Now, these were just illustrative. They were intended to sort of show you how various sources could be brought to bear. These kinds of sources are being used in other states to close their gaps. Obviously, different mixes. Some of the other sources that states are using, like tolling, we didn't investigate. We think the opportunities for tolling are much smaller in Alaska, and likely to be only useful in matching a small portion of selected projects. So as a statewide strategy, probably not something that's as viable. I thought I'd sort of finish off because the gas tax certainly is one of the more controversial, although they all have their strong controversial elements. But one of the interesting parts of gas tax has been some of the analysis that we've done around the country and looking at how it really affects retail prices for gas, which is the argument made most often for keeping the taxes low. What this chart shows you is that we've indexed basically the cost of different elements of the gas tax to show you how they compare over time. Going back, we go back to June of last year when we saw, 2007, when we saw the huge run-up in the price of oil. So the average crude price of oil, as we all know, shot up about $140 a barrel. And then drop precipitously to roughly where it is today. If we take that and we compare it to what the average price of gasoline is, not surprisingly, it tracks pretty closely. Now if we take the average price, retail price of gas in Alaska and look at that, we see some interesting trends. If we look at the period after which the gas tax was rescinded, the 8 cents a gallon was taken out, roughly in the second week of September, we can see the following. We can see that overall the price of crude oil dropped about 24%. And that's roughly, 21%. That's roughly analogous to the same drop that occurred in the national average cost of gasoline. But when that measure was put through, the cost of gasoline in Alaska only dropped 12%. Now, these are just observed. To really understand what's behind the mechanics of cost of gas in Alaska, you need to do some econometric analysis, and we haven't done that yet for this. But just observing it is that a lot of the tax that goes into gasoline at the retail pump gets passed upstream as well as downstream to the consumer. There is a very complicated and not very competitive arrangement in drilling for, exporting, refining, and distributing fuel. And what we found in a lot of states is that the retail price of gas does not track with the gas tax, and we can explore that further. But I will offer that two states are interesting comparison, New York and New Jersey. New York has the highest gas tax in the country, 42 cents a gallon. New Jersey has one of the lowest, about 14 cents or 12 cents a gallon. Guess what the cost of gas is in those two states, especially along the border between them? It's exactly the same. So with that, I'm happy to take some questions. Yeah.
Madam Chair? Okay, if I understand your last comment there, and I have several questions, so I'll just continue here. But if I understand, your last point was that the 8 cent reduction, 8 cents that we had for gas tax that we took away, the consumer did not necessarily see or realize that savings.
It's not clear that they did, no.
Okay. Also, do you have a cost comparison as to what it costs to build a road in Alaska on a per mile basis versus Montana or any other state? It just, my gut feeling is it sure seems to cost a lot of money to build even 1 mile road. And there used to be kind of a rule of thumb that you would figure on at least $6 to $8 million per mile of new road that was being built. And I don't know, I don't know, we have permafrost and wetlands and all these other things to deal with, but I would think some of the northern states in particular would have some of those same issues.
They do, and I'm going to let Jeff comment on the specific cost of that because the DOT keeps a lot of those figures. But I will say that Alaska has probably a higher environmental and other kinds of upfront entitlement or costs because of the number of endangered species you have to deal with, environmental concerns. So there's a number of challenges that you face before you even get down to construction that drive up your costs. And Jeff, I don't know if you want to comment. Or
well, and some of those requirements, though, are put on us by the federal government.
Yes, they are.
Okay. So I guess in some ways maybe we've justified getting so much of our money from the federal government because so many of the costs are put onto us by the federal government. But one thing you didn't mention is that at least in Anchorage, where I'm from, and Senator Davis, and maybe they do this in Fairbanks and the Valley as well, but we get a lot of our money for roads through property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I'd rather do that than, say, like a sales tax, because at least I can deduct property taxes off of my federal income tax. Do other states not use that as a source of revenue?
They do. A lot of states have experienced tremendous demands on the property tax for other kinds of municipal infrastructure. And so, and it also because of Proposition 13 and copycat propositions or threats to put such a measure in place in states, they've had to back down on the property tax. So that's one reason. But I agree with you. The sales tax is not a great source of funding for transportation. It's erratic. It moves with the business cycle. And it has no correlation to the amount of transportation you use. So it would not be my ideal source.
Okay. And then one more, if I may.
Follow up.
And then an interesting concept you brought up, the tolling. And it seems like I read somewhere where in some states they've actually turned over the building of roads and bridges to the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And then allowed the private sector to recoup their costs through tolling. Is that something on the increase or on the rise, or is that a fad? And the reason why I ask is it's really, we haven't really done any of that in Alaska that I'm familiar with. I know, in Anchorage, they talked about building a bridge over the Kinnick Arm and letting the private sector do that and recoup via tolls. But other than that, I haven't heard of that happening too much.
As far as the Low 48 goes, it's interesting use of a fad. I tend to believe it is perhaps something close to a fad because the projects that can be tolled are being cherry-picked, and they represent a significant volume of demand to relieve really severe congestion. Texas is certainly one of the leaders in that. They built a tremendous number of tollways. There's been a bit of a pushback now on this and saying that it's gone too far or that the case isn't being made as well as it was initially. Florida, California, all have made aggressive moves into this. They've talked about privatizing the parallel route to the New Jersey, Pennsylvania Turnpike. Chicago sold an enormous section of its elevated road connecting to Indiana to a private vendor, but it was able to do so because it's the Indiana residents who are paying the toll, not people in Illinois. There are a number of other profile cases where we've seen this pushback saying we don't want to privatize these public assets because when we do, we lose control over the pricing. Part of these agreements that go on for 60 years is that the private operator can adjust tolls with minimum amount of interference or power to change that for the state. There have been a few toll roads in Southern California that have gone bankrupt because the traffic that was expected didn't materialize. And there are non-compete clauses that were introduced in order to avoid such a thing happening, which is, of course, means you can't build public roads in it that would parallel or serve the same corridor. So there's a lot of problems with tolling, and I don't see it as being a very viable option. I will say this, that I think there's somewhat of an equivalent opportunity in Alaska, it appears, with the roads to resources, where you can have, where there are significant benefits to private companies, extraction companies, where they could be asked to pay for a significant portion, if not the entire cost of those roads, that would benefit public travel as well. Now, there's some issues around that. They obviously don't want public. There's some insurance and liability issues of traveling, a number of things. But I think that's an opportunity for Alaska, which is somewhat analogous to tolling.
All right. Thank you. Are you referring to, like, mining or oil or the resources that
Absolutely.
I feel true that that could be very problematic if we privatize a lot of our roads and the whole bidding. I'm not comfortable with that. But I had a question on, you said we're the only state that does not collect an income tax or have some form of state sales tax.
The two in combination.
The two in combination.
Right.
Because I thought North Carolina didn't have income tax in Wyoming, and maybe that changed, and I just haven't caught up.
No, they have. You're correct. Washington State doesn't have it, but they have sales taxes.
Okay.
In other words, you're the only state that doesn't have either one together.
Okay, and then just another that's a little bit off point, but not totally, when you're talking about registration fees, do several of the states have, they call this senior forgiveness on the registration?
Not sure. It's likely. I know there's been a lot of adjustments made to registration fees to deal with a number of situations. There's also talk in a number of states right now that are undergoing the same difficulties you are of adding surcharges to registration fees based on vehicle weight, based on closing a certain amount of deferred maintenance gap. So there's a lot of experimentation on that. It's one of the few user fees out there that seems to have be able to send a bit of a price signal, if you will, to a user as to what the real impact is on at least the capital cost of maintaining roads.
And you're well aware of the history, how difficult it is for us to get an income tax or even at local municipalities to certainly raise if we do have a sales tax or, you know, get the voters to go for that. And sometimes our very notion that we do have the $28 million or billion works against us, the permanent fund, $28 billion, because a lot of Alaskans say, well, you know, we got $28 billion. Why do we need an income tax? You know, let's tap into, you know, those funds. So it's kind of a conversation that goes around and around and doesn't get us too far. But every year without fail, maybe it's time to put in, go with a state income tax.
I think it would be challenging. There was some polling done, I believe, in the 90s on people's willingness to pay for transportation in particular. And I think some of the states that are looking now at imposing some pretty controversial users' fees and other kinds of taxes have done some polling. And they found that if the money is dedicated to a specific public service like transportation, people tend to be more willing to support it. At least that's the polling that's coming in. It's not as clear that tolling receives that support, but there's certainly the notion that if there is a new source of revenue that's dedicated to a particular service that a voter uses on a daily basis, especially congested roads or potholed roads, there has been higher support. And I know the polling done in Alaska at that period of time showed significant support, over 70%, I think, for sources dedicated to transportation.
And then I guess I would just ask, has your firm been enlisted to do further analysis from the Alaska Municipal League on following through on other topics?
No, this is the end of our current assignment, and they can decide whether they want to go further.
Be very useful. Senator Pasvan.
Thank you. Have you calculated the rate or cost per mile that would need to be imposed to equal the $585 million?
That's a very good question. The answer is no, but we have all the data to do it very quickly. I'm not sure where you're going with this, but I did not mention something that's being considered actively in other states and some experiments underway, which is a VMT charge, converting the gas tax from a per cents per gallon to a per cents per mile, with the argument that you should pay not only how much you drive, but where you drive and what time.
Right.
And there are some very interesting experiments underway, have been completed. As you can imagine, there are some privacy issues. Something about the gas tax, which is it's a very easy, low-cost, low-evasion source of revenue to collect. And it has a lot going for it. And if it weren't for the fact that a lot of vehicles are now using untaxed fuels and their mileage is going to steadily improve and eroding its purchasing power, I can't imagine the VMT fee having much purchase. It's a
what would the gas tax rate need to be if that were to equal the $585 million?
Right. We've done studies in other states to do a revenue-neutral switch to a VMT fee away from the gas tax. And in Washington, I believe it was about 1.2 cents a mile to replace what they currently collect, which I think is in 25 cents a gallon in fuel, somewhere in that name, give you a ballpark. But we could do the calculation, yeah.
I'm going to allow the gentleman who had his hand up there. Just stay seated, please, Christopher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jeff Otteson, Director of Program Development at DOT. To Senator Paskevin's question, the state sees about 5 billion miles of travel on the road network each year. So just with a little bit of math in my head, it's just under 12 cents per mile would be required as a mileage fee. And there you see the root of the problem here. There's just a huge gap. But I'll give you one other metric just to help you understand that number. The American Automobile Association, the last time I checked, said that it is costing the average driver about 50 cents a mile to own an automobile and use it, and about 75 cents a mile to own an SUV or a large pickup. And that's all cost. That's insurance and the cost of the vehicle, the maintenance, just everything that goes into it, including fuel, registration, all costs of ownership. And yet, the state gas tax is currently about a half penny of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even when you add in the federal, it adds up to about 2 pennies of that. So, said differently, we as drivers in Alaska, we don't mind paying for the vehicle, we just don't want to pay for the road. It's kind of one way to look at it. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us here, Mr. Otteson. Because I do have a couple questions. One was, again, on the cost of building a new road in Alaska. Why does it cost so much? And I think we ascertain a lot of that is federal regulations and federal requirements. Because I know when we do state roads with state funds, it's a lot cheaper than if we go through, like, the AMATS process or something.
That's correct.
But why do our roads, our highways in particular, seem to get these nasty ruts right down the middle? Is that... Are we using cheap asphalt? Or is it because of the studded tires that we have? Why is that? Because it just seems like once we do the New Seward Highway, the Glen Highway, then we have to go back and refill the ruts.
Through the chair, Senator, the
studs.
The rutting is primarily due to studded tires. You can see that very clearly. Just in the Anchorage area, the ruts are actually spaced about the average axle width of an automobile. They're not spaced the axle width of a large 18-wheeler. They fit an automobile much better. And it's essentially due to wear and tear. And we are experimenting in Anchorage and elsewhere with a hard aggregate, a type of rock that goes into the mix of asphalt that resists that wear and tear. And here's kind of the challenge. It works pretty well where we've tried it. Egan Drive here in Juneau now was paved probably 8 or 9 years ago with hard aggregate and has already seen about twice the life of the previous lift to pavement. The one prior to that wore out in a little over 5 years just from studded tires. So now we're pushing 9 years and we think we're going to go at least to 15 with this hard aggregate. But most of that hard aggregate had to be transported by barge, either from a source in Haines or a source in Puget Sound. We as a state have large mountains, but we have soft rock. Mm-hmm. And there aren't that many hard sources available. There's very few sources in the Anchorage Bowl. They were looking at a source north of Talkeetna, for example, as a possible source. So you start adding the transportation cost. it makes it hard to find that aggregate, so it's not easy. To go to the other part of your question about the high cost of roads, there's been an explosion in the cost of road construction. In my short experience in this job, which goes back to about 2003, we used to see the average project be in the neighborhood of 5 or 10 or 12 million, and now it's routine to see our projects cost 30 and 40 and 50 million. And it's really the same size project, it's just they cost a lot more.
Okay, very good. And do we still have the studded tire tax there? Did we get rid of that last year, a year ago? I know we talked about it.
The 2030 study?
The 10 cents a tire, or what was it, a dollar a tire for studded tires, the studded tire tax?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, there was legislation to take that off, and I don't recall the outcome of that legislation.
I don't remember either. So that's okay.
We have to revisit that maybe. On that topic of, and then I'll get right to you, Senator Pasquin, on that topic of tire, isn't it true that some of the all-weather tires now can accomplish the same thing as some of the studded tires, and that's been a conversation of getting, that's part of why people want to get rid of the studded tires?
Yes, Madam Chair, there is, I've heard anecdotal reports that the studless tires that use a different compounding and I believe a different pattern of how the tread is formed have been very, I just heard personal anecdotes that they've been very effective.
That's probably,
but there's some people who just believe studs are part of their kind of their own personal safety. And
right.
You know, as we go through these back and forth periods of freeze and thaw, sometimes studs are the only thing that make a difference. So.
Right. Senator Pasquin.
I was just going to follow up on just doing the quick calculation, assuming a vehicle that gets 20 miles per gallon, if we were to fund the $585 million gap, that vehicle that gets 20 miles per gallon, the gas tax should be $2.40 per gallon. That's
right. And if I can offer an observation, the bill that was introduced last year that would have created the Alaska Transportation Fund at $1 billion, sourced from really our resources. We are a resource state. We're not a population state. We got this vast geography and a small population, and so asking our population to pay for it is probably never going to work for the very reason you point out. And I think ultimately the state will have to look again to something like the Alaska Transportation Fund, because I don't know what else works. In fact, let me just close by saying the Australians have a perfect saying for our situation. It's the tyranny of geography. Big state, very expensive to cross, and not many people to pay for it.
Okay. And do you have, okay, Senator Myers?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you have any closing comments, and then we'll go to Christopher.
I think, Mike, do you, Chris?
I actually
have questions for Jay.
And Senator Meyer has one more question for you.
Yeah, and actually this may be a question you don't want to answer, because this isn't the Finance Committee, I understand. But the studded tire tax, repealing that, we actually passed that under Governor Murkowski, and I know it was a priority of Governor Palin's to get rid of that, and I think it did pass the House, and it must have stopped in the Senate. But certainly the governor has been very proactive in getting rid of the gasoline tax. So, and to do the transportation fund like you're talking about, if I recall, we were going to set aside like $500 million and put it into kind of endowment and let the interest off of that, and then you guys would use that money to fund the roads. Well, since we got a $1.2 billion deficit this year, it's going to be hard to get $500 million set aside for this. So assuming that's off the table, what does the administration recommend as far as trying to deal with our roads and our bridges and how we're going to fund those?
Well, I'm not sure we have an answer right now. I think it's the AML study is really takes this a step further. I think when this study was initiated back last fall, the price of oil was still pretty high and the stock market was still pretty healthy. There's been two big, huge events that have happened, and so the idea of the transportation fund is clearly difficult in today's world. We all know the facts. And yet, at the same time, the governor has pointed out that these taxes are a nuisance. Alaska, historically, is not a state that likes taxes. It's been a long time that we have since we've done anything to the gas tax but suspend it. We haven't raised it in really in modern history. In fact, what I have said is 100 years ago when the Alaska Road Commission first came into being, in towns like Juneau and Nome and Fairbanks where you had the mining camps, they put a two-day labor tax on every able-bodied man, and it was on the men only, of labor to build roads. So at that point in time, people understood they needed roads, and they really contributed quite a bit if you think about it. They put in 2 days labor. In 1961, as a very young state with a very small population, we passed an 8-cent gas tax. Doesn't sound like a lot in today's world, but in 1961, that was the highest tax in 50 states. So there's been quite a transition in our collective thinking about this, if you think about those data points.
Yes, a follow-up, Senator Meyer.
Okay, let me do a follow-up on an issue we haven't talked about, and that's the economic stimulus. And I forget the amount that DOT is getting from that, at $189 million or something like that.
It's $175 million.
Okay, $175 million. Do you think that is the right amount for Alaska being a young state like we are? I know Senator Stevens used to always argue that we're the one of the youngest states, and our infrastructure isn't built like the lower 48 states, so we need more money. So based on this stimulus being over $1 trillion, $175 million doesn't sound like very much.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, you raise a really good point. The way the stimulus formula was finally crafted is half of the formula was crafted by the Senate and the other half was crafted by the House, and so we ended up with a blended formula. I'm trying to think, it was the House that actually would have given us a higher amount of money. We were going to get about $240 million from the House's formula and about $130 from the Senate formula. And they ended up splitting the baby, literally. That percentage of funds to Alaska, our piece of that pie, is about 0.6%. To put that in perspective, looking at federal funds that we've gotten in the past under Safe TILU and under prior authorizations, T21, it's been closer to 1.1-1.2%. So already we've seen our share of the federal pie start to shrink just in this stimulus bill. And I think it's a sign of everything that Chris talked about. There's going to be a shift toward large population states. There's going to be a shift toward the big metro areas. And by that, I mean the 100 top largest cities in the United States. Alaska is not on that list, not Anchorage or anyone else in the state. I just think there's going to be a disinvestment going on into rural America and to smaller America, small town America. And that's going to be harmful to us. Mm-hmm.
So leave us with something we can be happy about.
It's St. Patrick's Day. Yeah.
Beautiful day outside, Madam.
It is a beautiful day in Southeast. I agree. Christopher, do you have any closing?
No, just
did I
maybe
give all members a chance. Senator Fleffen. Okay.
I will say that you're dealing with a situation that every state we work with, and we work with most of them, are facing, and they're facing the same challenges. The difference here is that some of the traditional sources, this diversification of spending, are not as workable here. And I agree that that Jeff's point that the geography here is really a disadvantage. Having said that, the third trend, along with the current move away from rural states that would put you at a disadvantage, is that the federal government is looking for self-help financing. They're looking for more matching funds. And I think you are at a disadvantage, I'll say this measured and carefully, but of your own making, in that the traditional user fees that are imposed in other states to fund transportation are not in place here. So there's headroom for you to look at. It's not going to be politically easy, but I think the consequences of not having those matching funds to leverage what you can get out of the federal government, even in declining share, are going to be immediate fixes. Long-term, no, they're not going to solve the problem.
Okay, is there anything else from anybody, or would you?
Can I make one?
Yes, please, and come forward, please, for the record, and
yes,
state your name, as we do have.
Oh, Thank you. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. The nice part is we certainly didn't bring this forward to demand any sort of action right now. We know you have your hands full, but we felt it was very necessary to get this issue on the table. We thought it needed to be talked about so that we weren't all caught unaware when things may tank even more than they have so far. So we just thought that we would get this study in front of you. You could read it, perhaps even during the interim, and then maybe next year it's something we can all tackle together. But this was meant to be more of a help than anything else to get the discussion rolling with municipalities, with the legislature, with DOT, and whoever else might help you so that we can all come up with some answers as to how to fund our roads in the future.
Thank you very much, and it has been very informative, and I certainly appreciate the presentation as well as I'm sure the other members do. So with that, we're adjourned.